I haven't spoken here for a whole month, actually, so thank you, Steve, and all those of you who were speaking over the last month, really, and I've enjoyed it anyway. Feels like I've had a month off, which is really, really great. So so hopefully I can get back into speaking this morning, and we'll see where we go. But 262 days, apparently, to Christmas. Did you know that? I know we're about to enter into Easter season, and we'll come back to that in just a moment. But 206. I wonder how many of you are checking on your phones now whether I'm right. Yeah, 262 days till Christmas. What'd be interesting to know how many of you here are already preparing for Christmas? Do we have any? You don't. No. Although you don't want to admit it, there will be somebody that's already bought some presents for Christmas, has already started playing into your monthly savings scheme for your turkey or whatever it may be, you know. Let me just get my notes. See, I haven't done it for a little while, so I've got my brain back into this. So, I wonder how many of us here, there's other things that we plan for as well, isn't there? I wonder if anybody's, you're definitely not planning for this year's Christmas. You're not planning for 2020, are you? But there's other things that we're planning that are a little bit further in advance. It might be like a family party or a wedding or something like that. And, we plan quite ahead in advance for those things, don't we, as well? Or retirement. Some of us, might be getting... Are you planning for retirement? We might plan for that a little bit. Yes, hands go up. Yes, please, God. But actually, probably we even start in our 20s for that or something, don't you? If you're playing into a pension scheme and you start, And then there's different ways that we plan ahead, isn't there? There's some of us that when you know something's going to happen, you've got an event coming up or Christmas or whatever it may be, you're planning miles ahead, aren't you? As soon as you know it's happening, you're on. You've got a schedule, you've got dates, you've got to do this, but you're going to do that. Everything's organised, and you are super advanced and you've got it. And then there's the rest of us. It happens when it happens, and suddenly it's coming up. When it comes to Christmas, those of you who plan in advance, November 30th, it's all done. All the presents are wrapped, the tree's there, it's all done, you've got it. And then there's others, December 24th, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you start buying your presents, I'm ashamed to say that I've been there a long, long time ago. So that's different ways that we approach, and there's different ways that we approach planning, isn't there? And we're all different in that. What about 4,000 years? What about planning ahead 4,000? We say 4,000 years, probably actually how you view that's going to depend on your theology, probably. So at least 4,000 years, if you believe in a young earth. If you believe in an old earth, then you're probably talking millions of years. And actually, if you really want to be theologically precise, you're probably saying planning ahead since eternity past. And how do you measure that, In fact, actually, we're about to enter into the Easter season, aren't we? And so this next month, we're thinking about Easter and we're thinking about this. And in that sense, we're told that that Jesus was the Lamb who was slain from the creation of the world. And so what we're going to be thinking about over this next little season, over the Easter season, is something that didn't just catch God by surprise. That God has been planned for at least 4,000 years, probably millions of years, certainly since eternity past. That God is a planning God. And so we're going to think a bit about that a little bit later on. But over the next few weeks, we're going to think about, you can have this season called Lifted. Okay, let me, I know it's a terrible slide, but you just Google pictures, don't you, and then put them up there, but some of them. And we're going to think about something, we're going to think over the next few weeks about the idea that next week we're going to think about Jesus was lifted on a cross. I know it's Next week it's Palm Sunday, but actually we've got to choose one week when we think about that. We don't meet on Good Friday. And so we're going to think about how Jesus was lifted on the cross, and what does that mean? And we're going to try and think a little bit about what that has achieved, but also what does that demand from us? What does that require from us as well? And then we're going to think on Easter Sunday, we're going to think about how Jesus was lifted from the grave. And we're going to have three baptisms here as well, which is exciting, isn't it? Fantastic. You know, we're going to baptizing Moses and Joshua and Abigail, three young people. And they'll be the first ever people, as far as I know, that have been baptized in Chalkstone Community Center. That's got to be worth something, hasn't it, really? And I don't know about you, but actually I think there's something really prophetic and special about that, really, that we're talking about young people getting baptized here in as the first people that are baptized in this center. You know, I'll leave you to think about that one. But yeah, so we'll be celebrating that, and that'll be an all-age service. So, and we'll be doing things in a little bit different ways and stuff. So yeah, so that'll be exciting. And then we're going to think after that, on the Sunday after that, we're going to think about how Jesus was lifted from the grave. And so when we think about Jesus being lifted from the cross, we call that the crucifixion, don't we? When Jesus being lifted from the grave, we call that the resurrection. And when Jesus being lifted back to heaven is the ascension. And so we're going to think about what that means, what those things achieved, and we're going to think a little bit about how we respond to that. You know, Jesus, when he was lifted from the grave, was an expression of the power of God. And you know, we've been thinking in Ephesians. I don't know if you picked this up in your group. We did in ours. There's no competition with these Connect groups, you know, but every Greek word for power is used in Ephesians 1 there, when Paul is talking about Jesus being raised from the dead and seated on high. That God expressed all that power that is available to him in dragging Jesus out of death, back to life and into heaven, ascended again. And so when we're thinking about this season of Easter, we're thinking about something of the power and the activity and the ministry of God into this world that is transformational and that should challenge us and change us. You know, we love Christmas, don't we? We love. Well, some of us do. Not. Some of us are a bit more humbuggy. You know, I'll keep my eyes to the ground here. Won't look at anybody, Bill. Sorry. he can take it. All right. But yeah, some of us, you know, Christmas is like, oh yeah. But for most of us, it's all lovely and gooey, isn't it? And we make a huge big thing of Christmas, and it is fun that we enjoy it and stuff. But we don't make quite so much of Easter, do we, really? Easter tends to just be one of those things that just happens there, and we sort of get through it, actually. But actually, you know, if you're a Christian, you know, we don't have to biblically, by the way, celebrate either Christmas or Easter. It's not demanded from us in the scriptures. But it's not a bad thing to do, is it? You know, it's a helpful thing. But for us as Christians, actually, if you're a believer here, then actually probably Easter is more significant than Christmas in one sense, if you're going to use it as a time to reflect on what God has done for us and what God is still doing. And so let me just encourage you, perhaps over the next month as you accelerate towards, as we move towards Easter, as we go through Easter, maybe just use it as an opportunity to pause and think a bit about what Jesus has done for us in the crucifixion and in the resurrection and in the ascension. What does that mean for you? What does that mean for your Christian life? Why is it important? Rather, you know, we don't have to get caught up so much with the glitz and the glam and the activity and the sheer energy that we do at Christmas. Easter can be a time to reflect and pause and think. And you might say, well, I haven't got any time. Well, if you walk into the bus stop, have a little think about some of these thoughts, maybe. You know, if just 5 minutes before you go to bed, you know, start thinking some of these thoughts, and then you're awake all night because you're thinking about them, you know, but whatever it may be. So that's what I'm going to sort of encourage us to do, perhaps, over the next few weeks. Great, okay. So before we get into that, so today what I wanted us to do was just to spend a few moments thinking about how, as we've already touched on, really, that the crucifixion, the resurrection, the ascension weren't just things that happened because God just had to sort of, that just happened by accident, if you like, really. They didn't catch God. When Jesus came, it wasn't like God thought to himself, I've got to have a little walk around the planet. And then it all went horribly wrong because we didn't like him. And that ended up him getting crucified. And then God had to sort the mess out by raising Jesus from the dead. It wasn't like that. It was something that was planned. We're told that Jesus was the Lamb that was crucified from the foundation of the world. And so I want to just think a few thoughts about that for a few moments. Is that all right? Okay, good. But before we do, you might want to actually, the idea that Jesus came and was crucified actually does throw up quite a few sort of difficult questions as well, doesn't it? We haven't got time to sort of explore all of them this morning, but I thought maybe we'd just dig into them. Now, why should God even create the earth if he knew that we would fall? You know, Easter is a response by God to the fact that we chose to rebel against him, that we chose to walk away from God, that we chose to say, you know, we don't want this God, and that's depicted for us in the account of Adam and Eve in Genesis. And so Easter really is an expression of God responding to that and sorting out the mess of our rebellion, really. And so you might easily ask, well, why did God even get us here in the first place? If our rebellion was going to cause such pain and such suffering and such hardship, why would God even create us anyway? Why would he create humanity in the first place? Why didn't he just leave it alone? And if I'm honest with you, I don't know that I can really fully answer that question. But the question I perhaps would put back there is, if you're a parent here today, why did you have children? Why did you have children? Did you at any point pause and think, I don't know if I want to bring a child into this awful world? I know I did, if I'm honest. Thought, do I really want to bring another life into this horrible world? You know, when it's so hard and tough. And yet, actually, we do, don't we? We have children because there's something in us that just wants to express love a little bit further, a little bit wider, that we are beings who fundamentally want to love other people. And you might think you don't sometimes, but actually, there's something in us. If we are created in the image and the nature and the character of God, then we are loving beings. If God is love, then somehow or another, there is something about us that wants to carry on creating, that wants to have more objects to love, more people, more beings to love. And somehow it is that when we have children, that the relationship that we have between us doesn't just... It expands, doesn't it? It's something you've got more love to give. Love is something that just grows, it expands, it meets the need, it gets bigger. And so perhaps, that's one reason perhaps we might say, well, God created us because he's a loving God and he just had to do it because he wanted more beings to love. Maybe that's one way of looking at it, an expression of who he is. And then you might say, well, actually, about this whole 4C thing, you see, there's two streams of thought, really. See, I think God foresaw what was happening, but he didn't necessarily preordain it, okay? He didn't sort of say, well, this is... But there is a stream of thought that says that actually us falling was all part of God's big plan anyway. That he wanted Adam and Eve to fall, not wanted so much, but he worked in it, and that it was all part of that stream. And if you take that to the extremes, you have to believe that God actually works through our sin, that somehow or another he is preordained that to happen. And some people are on that end of the scale and down there. And then there's the other end of the scale is where people say, well, actually, you know, the future is full of possibilities. That it's not that God prefixes everything that happens and all the choices that we make, but that he responds to them. But even those that take that view, it's more what they call open view of things. It's a bit deep theology, this, just for a few moments. I hope that's okay. It's pretty, very... even if those who take that end of the scale, you know, that say that actually that God responds to our actions, they would say that God is so infinite in his ability to think that he knows everything that could happen and already has a response to whatever could happen. So nothing catches him out. And so whichever end of that theological spectrum you sit, or whether in the middle or wherever you are on that scheme of things, the point is that God in his foresight was not caught out by surprise, when Adam and Eve fell, or when you and I fall, or when you and I do wrong, God is not caught out by surprise. He has a response, and he has a response to that. The outcome is perhaps the same. And then the third really in that is, the point is, and I'm just struggling to know how to really make this really, but Jesus did suffer as we suffer. Even though he created, see, one way of looking at that view over there where God responds to all the possibilities is to see, and I know this is a bit crude, okay, but it's helped me in my thinking over the years on and off, and it's just that in, as the Trinitarian God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit meet to decide whether or not they're going to create humanity, and they're thinking about creating the world and the universe, and they're sitting there thinking, you know, oh, it'd be fantastic, we'll have this there and that. And then as they're discussing, suddenly one of them says, but what if it all goes horribly wrong? what if they decide that they want to be self-orientated rather than loving towards others? What if they want to choose to use power to walk over one another and to hurt one another? What if they choose to inflict pain and suffering on one another? What if it just all goes horribly wrong? And so they pause for a moment and think, shall we do this thing? Shall we? And as that conversation goes on, Jesus, within the Trinitarian conversation, says, actually, I'll tell you what, this is just so full of wonderful possibilities. This is so full of immense beauty, and the good of this outweighs the bad of the whole thing. If that happens, if that goes wrong, then I will come, and I will go, and I will die on their behalf, and I will show them what love really is, and I will show them how we can recreate something beautiful out of something bad. You know, I'll make it work. I'll go. I'll sort it out. Now, I'm not saying that's how it happened, but somehow it captures what's in this, is that the God of love, the God who created us, in his foresight, said, you know, even if this goes horribly wrong, then I will suffer with them. I will get involved. Any pain that we have ever felt, any trauma, any sense of discouragement, and however that is, Jesus has walked that journey. He has gone. He has been involved with this world. He has experienced the worst of rejection. He has experienced, you know, and just for trying to do good. In his birth, forgive me for using the crude language here, but in his birth, he was a bastard. And in the context of that day, that meant something. That was hard. That was difficult. His parents would have had a whole stigma thing. Within the first 2 years of his life, he becomes a refugee, and they have to run for their lives and live in another country. Don't know too much about those next few years, but then as he goes public 30 years later, immediately he starts to challenge injustice in political and religious leadership. He's rejected. He's hounded as he tries to just do good, heal people, and bring goodness into the, you know, he is horribly rejected, and you know the rest of the stories as it goes on. He has walked the journey of suffering as well. So in one sense, that sort of helps us. It helps me to think, I've still got plenty of questions, I've got plenty of the whys, but it helps me to know that this God of heaven has got involved here. He hasn't just sat outside of the equation. He's got his hands dirty. He has been involved in this. So, probably I've taken too long already, so I'm just going to really whip through these few thoughts. So, what has God always been planning? I think in Matthew 25, we get the parable of the sheep and the goats, don't we? And in the context of that particular parable, let me just get to it. The only place where Jesus explicitly refers to himself as the king, and it's a picture in Matthew 25 of how the nature of judgment and the way that it will work for us at the end of time. And in verse 34, it says, the king will say to those on his right, come you who are blessed by my father, Take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. And then a little bit further on in verse 41, Jesus then talks to the goats and says, then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. It seems to me that we're going to think about the benefits of the cross and what that's meant and what God had been planning through all that. But fundamentally, it seems to me this parable gets us to the point of it comes down to two things that God has been planning since the creation of the world. One is he has prepared a kingdom for you and I to live in. He's prepared a kingdom for us to live in. A type of world that we're meant to live in. Now, I know it all sounds fancy and idealistic, but that's the reality. That what we see in the first couple of chapters of Genesis of Adam and Eve living in the garden with God is the type of kingdom that God has always wanted for us. God has always wanted us to live in that particular type of kingdom. And that's where we end up at the end of Revelation. When we get to the end of the book, we find that that's where God takes us back to the garden, to the kingdom, to the place where His principles rule, where his governance rules. And that's what you and I are being shaped towards. When we're taught to pray, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. We're being taught to pray that that kingdom comes into something, of that kingdom comes into our reality now. But that has always been the preparation. When the Lamb was slain before the creation of the world, he was just taking us back to the original intention. But also there is that fire that was prepared for the devil and his angels. And it's interesting that it doesn't say before the foundation of the world there, but we are told that in one sense what we're getting the picture here is that the preparation was either for eternity with God or for destruction. That there is that sense where we're either going to live, we finish either with God or not with God, with the devil in terms of where we are. And in one sense, that's where we're heading. The preparation, whether we like it or not, comes down to we're either going to live with Jesus for eternity or we're going to suffer the same fate as the devil and those that have followed him. It does come down to heaven and hell. You know that, I mean, personally, I believe that when we die, the scriptures teach us that there is a consciousness and that we do experience hell, for however that it means. It's, you know, it's not a subject we talk a lot about these days, is it? But hell is a place where we are conscious of our absence of God and that where it will not be pleasant. I'm not sure that the Bible actually teaches that we're conscious for all eternity in hell. I think that is a theological belief that has found its way into the Christian world as mainstream. It actually is not very strong in the scriptures, I don't think. We are given immortality as a free gift of God in salvation. And so we live for eternity because of the salvation that we're given. But nevertheless, it still comes down to heaven and hell. Even if hell is not for eternity, you're not going to want to go there at any point. And so it comes down to this choice between whether or not we're going to follow Jesus or we're not. And that's what the preparation of God has for us here. Okay, I've got lots of other things I would talk about, really. I'm not really going to pursue them. I was going to think a little bit about how God prepared. You know, he prepared through the Old Testament, you see, through the law, the prophets and the writings in the Old Testament. You see how the law is literally in Hebrews is called a parable of the way that God works. And so when we sacrificed the Passover lamb, it wasn't just about a nation remembering they came out of Egypt. It was always about pointing to the lamb that was slain from the foundation of the world. When the priesthood of the Old Testament was never just about them needing a bloke to stand between them and God. It was always about pointing to the fact that we needed Christ to stand between us. Jesus is the fulfillment of the Old Testament, and it was always that is the stream and the movement. I mean, we will not understand the Old Testament text if we do not grasp Christ and what God was preparing, what he was moving towards. Would love to have talked a little bit more about that, but we're not going to, so this morning. Taking a little bit longer than I thought I would this morning, so I just want to just wrap this up with just a few thoughts then, really. We're going to be thinking about the cross next week, okay? You're going to think about what that achieved for us and what it demands of us. You're going to think about how God's power was exercised in the resurrection and what Jesus is doing for us now in heaven as he dwells in the ascension. But this morning, when we're thinking, what's the take home from this morning? Thinking about the preparation of God, the fact that God prepared. I guess really there's just a couple really. One is, I suppose, if God's a planning God and he plans well in advance, maybe we should as well, hey? Just on a practical side of things, really. If we don't plan, a bit cheesy saying, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail, people say, don't they? And so planning, God is a planning God. He has always got a movement towards, but more than that, really, is, I don't know what you're going through. We will all be going through different things of life right now. And I know some of what you're going through, so you have to be careful when so I know that we're all walking through different things in life right now. Some of them are great, some of them are a bit more challenging, some of them are a bit more neutral. But what this tells us is that God is not caught out by your circumstance. He knows what's happening with you right now. And whatever it is that you're walking through, he has a response to help you walk through it. Whatever it is that is going on in your life right now, he has a way of helping you with that. It might be of fixing the problem. It might be giving you the grace to walk through it. It might be that he's expecting you to expand your view of things so you learn something that's going to cause you to be a bigger person on the other side of that. Whatever it may be, whatever your circumstance right now, God is not caught out. You know, one of the things when we study the scriptures and we look at God is it is easy to just give up because we think, why would God allow that? The reality is, if we are truthful with the scriptures, there are loads of times when you think, why would God allow that? And he did. But actually, somehow through the end of that, he somehow helped people through it and they became bigger people, or they found a strength to go through it, or there was some other agenda. And maybe that's what's going on. Some of the things that you're walking through. The point I want to just make is don't give up because of your trauma. Don't give up because of the difficult circumstances. Don't give up. Dig deeper into God. Find out what he is, how he is going to help you through it. There will be a sense God is not caught out by surprise with whatever you're walking through right now. He's been in the business of getting people through tough times for a long time. He can handle your situation. And maybe today one or two of us need to respond to God in that and say, God, you know, I need you to help me. It might equally be that you don't actually get the Easter story yet and you've never really found that Jesus and you wouldn't really say that you're a follower of him. I would love to say to you today, you know, if you don't get the Easter story and you don't really know what that means, please just talk to a Christian who does. Ask them to help you. Grasp that. Because if you get Easter, if you get the meaning of it, you get it, you get the whole thing. You really do. If you don't get that, you haven't really got Jesus. And I would be bold enough to say, perhaps, that you're not necessarily a Christian yet. If you don't get the Easter story, but if you get it, you get everything. So let's just pray, shall we?